This is Powering Michigan's Future with Ken Rogalski. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. The best contractors, the best electricians, period.
Good evening. On tonight's edition of Powering Michigan's Future, we'll discuss House Bill 4813, which proposes major changes to Michigan's regulatory framework regarding electrical work, with Michael Richard, business manager of IBEW Local 58, Tom Middlebrun, executive director of the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan, and Pat Devlin, the head of the Michigan Building and Construction Trades Council. We'll also learn about a new program for returning veterans called eStart, which offers pre-apprenticeship opportunities for vets, with Gary Palulik, training director of the Detroit Electrical Industry Training Center, and we'll be joined by Brad Hewitt, a proud veteran and electrical apprentice, to learn more about how the trade has changed his life. Stay tuned for Powering Michigan's Future, only on News Talk 760 WJO.
It's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's Ken Rogalski.
Welcome to WJR's Powering Michigan's Future. We kick off tonight's show with Michael Richard, business manager of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 58, and Pat Devlin, secretary treasurer of the Michigan Building Construction Trades Council. Gentlemen, good to see you. Welcome back.
Great to be back here with you.
Good to have you. Mike, let's start with you first. House Bill 4813 tonight, it's making its way through the legislature. How is this thing going to impact business for you guys?
Well, for us, we got a lot of concern with this, because what the bill is essentially saying is we're going to take the tried and true ratio of one apprentice for every one master or journeyman electrician and change that to three apprentices to every one. So we have a lot of concern with, you know, not only with the training aspect, but the safety aspect and job site safety, but as well as safety to the public. If you put this in perspective, you got a 30-man job, you could have 8 journeymen and 24 apprentices with this new proposed
ratio.
Right,
under their rules.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, whether it's a hospital, a house, school, I think that's, we have a lot of concern with that. And I think the people in the state of Michigan should have a lot of concern with that, too. There's a huge potential for safety issues that come out of this.
So is it just a lot of bodies who don't necessarily have to be there walking around a construction site that bothers you?
Well, what the issue is you're going to have untrained people coming right off the street, brand new apprentices, could be put into this mix, right? So we've always had this one-to-one ratio, and that's really how we pass down the skill and the knowledge in our trades. Having that journeyman-apprentice relationship, it's tried and true. We've been doing it for over 100 years at the IBEW. It's worked great for us. Now, having gone through that myself and been an apprentice and trained apprentices, I know I can tell you it'd be virtually impossible to pass down that knowledge to three apprentices at the same time.
Yeah, just more people in the room. Did the legislature or any of their aides come and talk to you and find out, what really happens at a construction site to find out if this law is really going to make good?
Well, we've made several attempts to talk to a lot of folks in Lansing, of course, on this. And it's really a bill that was driven by greed on the part of a few small contractors that wanted to be able to exploit cheap labor. And then it's kind of gained momentum with the ignorance with the industry. And we've tried to educate as many as we can. The problem comes in where it almost turns into a partisan debate when it's not. We're talking about public safety, worker safety, and partisanship should be taken out of the debate.
Right. It seems something that's worked so well for so long has to be changed now. Do you ever wonder about that?
Yeah, well, it's baffling. So like I said, it's been working great, and we have I'm biased, but I say we train the best electricians on the planet in Local 58 for sure. But I would match the skill sets of union, non-union tradespeople in Michigan with the rest of the country and really the rest of the world. We have some really, really great talent in the state of Michigan, And I think it's because of the way we've done things for so long. And to change that, to me, is just crazy.
Patrick, for a second, you know, we've heard so much in the school system about putting too many kids in a classroom is really not a good idea. The kids really don't learn that much. And it seems now we're kind of taking this theory into the apprenticeship program where you're going to have a number of apprentices instead of just one-on-one. What's your opinion on this?
Well, that seems to be the mentality that exists here, and it couldn't be further from the truth. It's not the same application. And as you know, 28 and 32 kids in a classroom probably is a good thing. They far exceed this, and that's what this piece of legislation would do. It blows the numbers out of whack. It's that untrained apprentice needs close eyes on them at all times. Construction sites are very dangerous in their nature, and they're dangerous for all trades, especially the electrical trades that deal with what they deal with the infrastructure of electrical. So, yeah, we don't feel that argument holds up, and it really would diminish training for apprentices.
If you have a journeyman who's training an apprentice one-on-one, all of a sudden now he has to watch out for one person, and now it may be he has to watch out for three or more people.
Yeah, it's an impossible task. Understand that journeyman that's supervising that apprentice isn't just supervising apprentices. He's got his own skill task to bring to the table. And, that's to have three apprentices under one setting, he's probably going to, or that the situation would be, they'd be spread out, and that whole safety feature, like Mike addressed, would really come into play.
Do people learn better when they have one-on-one interaction with their journeyman?
Oh, I definitely say not only do they learn more, I just think it's a necessity. I mean, there's just so much going on a construction site, and these untrained workers need somebody that's, they're the shadow, they've got to be right in front of you at all times. And, bringing in two more responsibilities in this picture, it just doesn't work out.
Quick question. Does the apprentice do the hands-on work with the journeyman looking over his or her shoulder?
They both perform the tasks together. Mostly the journeyman is training, but, that's all training and the learning process. The journeyman is comfortable with what he can put in the apprentice's hands.
Great. So. Gentlemen, can you stay with us?
Sure. Absolutely.
Good. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back with more of Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Powering Michigan's Future on WJR. Here again is Ken Rogulski.
Welcome to WJR's Powering Michigan's Future. We continue our discussion tonight about House Bill 4813. We welcome back Michael Richard, business manager of IBEW Local 58, Pat Devlin, head of the Michigan Building and Construction Trades Council, and we welcome to our discussion now Tom Middlebrun, executive director of the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan. Guys, good to have you all back.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Mike, let's start off again. We were talking about in our last segment House Bill 4813. Any more concerns about the fact that there's just more people walking around a job site than before?
Yeah, and I know we talked a little bit about the public safety aspect and a little bit about the job site safety, but to kind of put this in perspective, even if you're on a residential build, it's a little bit easier to maybe say 2-1. You may be able to keep an eye on a couple of apprentices on a residential build. But imagine you're in a refinery or an auto plant or even a multi-family dwelling, a high-rise, and you may be separated by a couple floors or certainly by a couple bays in an auto plant, and now trying to keep track of three apprentices.
Everybody,
impossible. And we're dealing with dangerous voltages, situations, a lot of moving parts. I mean, the jobs we're on are some of the most dangerous places on the planet, and now to add in more responsibility on a journeyman or a master electrician to say, now keep track of not only your original apprentice, but we're going to put two more on you. And as Pat said before, that journeyman's still got a job to perform himself. There's still things he's got to get done. And so it's, to me, that the the potential is too big and too much of a risk. We tried to caution the folks in Lansing. You don't want to go down that rabbit hole. This is not something you want to put the toe in the water and run with it and see how it works out, because it's not going to work out good.
So are you telling me that the journeyman basically is ultimately responsible for all the apprentices under his tutelage there?
Oh, absolutely. And as a journeyman or a master electrician, that's something you take very seriously. You know, you are responsible for that apprentice from the minute they show up to at the start of the day, and make sure that apprentice is in good working order and got all 10 fingers and toes and goes back to their family at the end of the day. And it's a big responsibility and one we take very serious in our trade.
So they get to do their job, teach, and do roundup duties if they got that many more people around them then.
Yeah, it'd be, again, virtually impossible. Especially when you're talking about the industrial setting and, you know, in a refinery or an auto plant, it's impossible.
All those conduits running around, all those empty wires?
Impossible.
Tom, good to have you back.
Thanks
to see you
me.
Again. You represent a big group of electrical contractors who employ the workforce of IBEW Local 58. What are your concerns about House Bill 4813?
Well, many of my concerns have already been talked about a little bit, but, you know, safety and liability on a construction job site or project, it's a huge concern for our contractor community. Productivity, as Mike and Pat both mentioned, all the work that has to be performed by the apprentices, if they're not supervised, or I should say by the journeyman under the supervision of an apprentice, if they're not properly supervised, the likelihood of them performing their duties properly, you know, starts to diminish. And if that work has to be performed again or redone, that obviously affects productivity and cost. It's not good for our business. It's not good for our customers.
You know, I never thought that here's a journeyman teaching others how to do his job, and he's a teacher, basically, but yet he's got to watch over all the others, and he has to still do a job. Does that slow the job down and make it less efficient to get the work done?
You're absolutely right, and Mike already mentioned earlier that NECA and IBEW together train some of the best electricians, you know, in the country and in the on the planet, as Mike puts it. And when you put that burden on the journeyman to be able to have to supervise and train more people than he really should have, it diminishes his productivity, and it affects the customer and it affects the contractor, and it's just not a good situation. And of course, we can go on and talk more about safety, because that's a huge concern. You know, Mike gave some great examples.
Yeah,
of
10 fingers, 10 toes.
Yeah, but some of the projects when I worked in the trade. I worked on all large industrial projects, and when I had that journeyman teaching me, it was not only good for my education that I had his undivided attention, but it was good for my safety. If some journeyman has to watch three apprentices that are spread out in a workplace, it's just not a good situation.
So based on your knowledge, your experience, you're still in favor of one-on-one, you know, teacher to student ratio.
Yes, in our industry, electricity is very dangerous and complicated, and it's just not responsible to go beyond that one-to-one ratio. Mm,
I hear you. Mike, let's go back for a second and shift gears to the Electrical Administrative Act. What's this thing all about, and how is it important to your industry?
Well, the Act itself basically spells out in the state of Michigan how we will, it's the guidelines for the contractors and the electricians that are out there performing work, it largely, in part, it protects the general public, and that was the whole intent behind it. So, looking decades, many decades ago, they put the statute together. And it's very complicated, but it basically spells out how an electrical contractor, an electrician, will do their job to best protect the people in the state of Michigan,
and get the job done in the process.
Oh, absolutely. And I know we've talking a lot about safety and reliability, and it just dawned on me because I'm looking out at Henry Ford Hospital now, but imagine...
Great view, by the way.
Yeah, beautiful. But imagine you're in that bed and there's an emergency and you hit that button to call for the nurse and it doesn't work, right, because this journeyman was overburdened with three apprentices and he couldn't properly oversee this and that thing's not working, right? So there's, you know, that's part of what's all written in and why the act is in place. It's to protect the people and make sure that the work that's being done by the electrical contractors and the electricians in the state of Michigan are being done right, and it's reliable, dependable, and safe.
Hmm. Tom, for a quick second, your current view on the Electrical Administrative Act from a business standpoint, what does it mean to you?
Well, part of what our electrical contractors do on a daily basis is manage risk on these job sites. And it's all
is there a lot of risk, you know, when you're putting something together like that, when you're building something?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, electricity is very complicated and has to be done correctly, because it has to be done right today so it lasts for decades and decades in a safe manner. And the job sites themselves, as these gentlemen already mentioned, I mean, we can look right down the street at the arena being built and just look at all those cranes and those bulldozers and the cement trucks and, you know, iron being moved and everything that's going on to get that project going. That is not a safe environment if you're not trained and you don't have somebody training you properly.
That's true. Pat, I'm sure your role at the Michigan Building Construction Trades Council, you see proposed changes to building regulations and codes across that absolutely make no sense in the business. Is that your feeling about this whole thing, too? Just why are you doing this?
It totally is my impression that there is no common sense. There's people that are making changes to what's worked and made us a great state in safety and everything that's represented on our construction sites, and it seems like we're moving away from that. And people that are making those decisions obviously don't have any insight of what makes apprenticeships work, or they don't know anything about this construction industry. And I don't expect them to. It's a very complex industry, but that I don't see it just happening in our industry. I think it's happening in a lot of other industries, too. So
when you stand back and look at this thing, any idea why something like this would go through when you have years and years of success and a track record of success? Why change it?
That's the million-dollar question. We are up in Lansing a lot trying to convince, you know, our side of the story. We take it very serious. We think we have a good story to tell, and at the end of the day, we often see decisions that are just irrational to us, that don't make sense, and that put people's lives at risk. So.
Pat, you would say vote no.
I would say vote no.
Michael, you would say vote no?
Absolutely no.
Tom?
And I would say vote no as well, and as Pat said, you know, common sense does not seem to be coming to the forefront on both of these issues.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Guys, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. We'll have more of Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR after these messages.
It's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. The best contractors, the best electricians, period. Here's Ken Rogulski.
Welcome back to WJR's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Ken Rogulski. Tonight we move our conversation to another topic of opportunity for returning veterans called ESTART, or the Electrical Skilled Trades Apprenticeship Readiness Training Program. We welcome Gary Polulik, Training Director of the Detroit Electrical Industry Training Center. Gary, good to see you again.
Thank you, Ken.
Good to have you back. Michael Richard, you're an old face here on the show. Good to have you back, too. Glad you
made
it back.
Great to be here.
All right. Gary, let's start with you. Tell us about ESTART. How did this program get together? How did it get started for you guys?
Well, thank you, first of all, Ken, for having me on your show again, Powering Michigan's Future. In September 2015, the United States Department of Labor developed the American Apprenticeship Initiative, which provided an opportunity to develop a program that's going to allow educational opportunity for a military vet for a career in the electrical industry or in any industry. And also, it's going to allow us to take a quality candidate for an IBEW NECA apprenticeship. The program is free of charge, and it also adds a earn while you learn aspect to the program. It's a 10-week program.
That's got to be attractive. Earn while you learn, and you still walk out with some knowledge that you didn't have before.
Absolutely, and you can't beat the price. It's free of charge. Part of the grant also offers an opportunity for the books and the supplies to be paid for through this federal grant. There's a transportation stipend to allow the person to have a transportation avenue to get to the training. And also, on the job, you're going to be paid $10 an hour wage, so you can't beat that.
Yeah. So what special experience, Gary, does this give a returning veteran?
Well, it gives them an enhanced opportunity for an IBEW NECA registered apprenticeship. What I mean by that is this. It's going to give them, through the course language, career exploration opportunities, training in algebra, reading, computer literacy, on-the-job training experience, of course, job readiness skills training, and also it enhances their opportunity because it's going to measure their personal commitment to complete the pre-apprenticeship by attending the classes, completing all the classroom assignments, being prompt and respectful. Also being drug-free at all times on the, in the program. These are all aspects of an IBEW NECA apprenticeship. So not only that, but it doesn't cost the person, the participant, anything, and they're going to potentially end up with an IBEW NECA apprenticeship, which is a good-paying job with benefits.
I don't know about you, but do you learn better with hands-on experience rather than just reading from a book on how to do something?
You know, people are built differently. I do. I need to work with my hands. It's just something that, you know, it's how God made me. And so, yes, this program will also offer that opportunity as a hands-on. And what we, since it's just a pre-apprenticeship, you're not really, it's not really designed to teach someone the trade, but to get them an idea of what the trade's all about. What we want to measure on the job site is, does the person have a motivation or an initiative to be on the job site? You know, construction requires a teamwork type atmosphere. So that's going to be important. Does he want to be there? You don't want to see any attendance issues because the contractors need you on the job site. So this, first of all, in all laughter, does the person have an alarm clock? Does he know how to use it? Because you got to be on the job. So these are some of the job site measurements that we want to make sure are measured for a successful candidate for our apprenticeship. And the second aspect of this is the related instruction. There are 220 hours of classroom instruction, which covers the gamut of industry orientation, safety training. A person coming out of this program is going to carry an OSHA 10-hour cert and also a first aid CPR cert. Introductory job lessons, which include like basic hand tools, power tools, job site equipment, electrical materials, and also I failed to mention that this is also inclusive of the participant getting a basic hand tool set for free. This also part of the curriculum is going to prepare the person for our apprenticeship application process, basically tech, math, algebra, computer literacy, and also interviewing skills. And then financially, there's a financial literacy training class that will touch base on like personal budgeting.
Yeah.
So
something everybody can use today.
Absolutely.
Mike, you're a veteran. And by the way, thank you very much for serving.
Oh, thank you.
Good to have you. What do programs like eStart provide a bridge to a veteran basically to say, hey, thanks for your work, thanks for your service, and here's how you can transition into peacetime life? What is it that you guys do?
Well, a lot of times you get somebody coming off active duty and they don't really have a game plan. They may think about going to college, and that may not be a reality right when they get out. So they need something to transition into. You're coming off of most 4 years, you know, 1 year hitch, and you're very regimented. You got everything going for you. You want to keep that rolling. You don't want to have any downtime. Now, mine was a little different. You know, the IBEW is a family business, so I knew when I was getting out that I was going to be getting right into the apprenticeship program, at least applying to get into it, which everything worked out good. But I think for us, it's important to get that message out there and to let these vets know when they're getting ready to be discharged off active duty that there are career paths available for them. And a lot of people don't know we're out there. A lot of people don't know that this is a viable career path, and it's not just a job, it's a career. You're going to earn while you learn. You're going to get benefits. You're going to start accruing benefits. So I'm very excited about this program, you know, both for us, because we get a great candidate, somebody, like I said, that's already regimented, that gets up, that goes to work. Because I tell you what, you know, having been there, you don't call in sick in the Marine Corps. There is no calling in sick.
No.
Right? Where are you going to be? You're in the barracks. Somebody's going to come get you, and they're going to put you to work. So, you know, you get somebody that's used to that mindset. So we get a good candidate, and we're also providing a great career opportunity for someone who's given of themselves to protect all of us back here at home.
But what a strong message you give to somebody who's returning from service that, hey, here's a future that you can have hope in that'll make a better life for you.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, it's a win-win. For us, we get that great that great candidate, and we're giving them a great career opportunity that they, you know, normally wouldn't know about or have access to. So we're, like I said, I'm really excited about it. I think it's a great program.
It sounds like it. Gary, back to you. Walk us through the 9-week E-Start program. Give us some of the details.
Well, I was mentioning earlier that we will provide, it's a twofold program, but it basically is going to measure soft skills training. On the job site, we just want to make sure that someone is coming to work on time, that they're motivated, that they have the want and the need to be there. And honestly, in the classroom, we want to make sure that the same measurements are you at school? Are you doing the completed assignments, completing all the assignments? So, you know, this is a dynamic that any corporation, any company, any organization wants in their workforce. So when you are dealing with military vets, you're bringing a very, very high quality candidate, someone who has some structure in their life. So this is a beautiful program to allow us to get a good quality candidate for our apprenticeship. Safety training is very, very important. So we start off the first 2 weeks, they're going to be in school for 40 hours, and we're going to get them the OSHA 10-hour cert and the safety awareness training. And then we want to get them on the job site as soon as possible. That seems to be the tricky part.
Now, why is that so important?
Well, because if you go through a program and you find out when you get on a job, I don't like to climb ladders, then you've just wasted people's time and our time. It's very, very expensive. People don't realize how expensive it is in education to run an apprenticeship program. So we want them to see if they fit on the job immediately. So that's why. So by the third week, we're going to get them on a job for 3 days.
Sounds wise.
Yes.
Now, I did hear you say there's compensation. How much? When's it start?
Oh, that's a beautiful thing about this. It's actually twofold. You're going to get compensated while you're in class. There's a transportation stipend. It's not a lot of money, but
but at least it's something.
It's something that's going to get you to the classroom. And once we get you on the job site in that third, fourth week, and then the fifth week, what you end up going to do is make $10 an hour. And that's not like a sharp stick in the eye there.
So how do you apply for this?
So basically what you're going to go to right now is our website, DetroitEITC.org. Quite frankly, right now I'm working on interviewing our first cohort, which is going to start in May. But if you go to our website, that's got all the information. DetroitEITC.org.
Gary, great. Thanks. Michael, thanks. Stay tuned. We'll have more of Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Powering Michigan's Future on WJR.
Welcome back to WJR's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. Tonight we've been talking about a new program for veterans launched under the direction of the Detroit Electrical Industry Training Center called E-START, or the Electrical Skilled Trades Apprenticeship Readiness Training Program. We continue our talk tonight with Gary Polulik, Director for the EITC, and we also welcome Brad Hewitt, a proud veteran of the Air Force and a electrical apprentice. Brad, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thank you, Ken. Glad to have this opportunity to speak to you today.
Well, thanks for your service, too. We really deeply appreciate that. Gary, let's start with you. In our last segment, Michael was talking about why veterans make such a good employee for the workforce. Well, what are your thoughts on this?
Ken, military vets bring structure, commitment, maturity to the table. They understand teamwork, and they are the definition of discipline. We all want persons of this caliber on our team.
Somebody who can follow orders, basically.
Yes, sir.
I hear you that. Brad, how's it feel to be an electrical apprentice after your all years of service?
It's not where I thought I would be, but it's been very rewarding for me, taking fair advantage of every opportunity that's been given to me.
Now, you're an Air Force veteran, right?
Correct.
Now, was it difficult getting out of the Air Force and coming into civilian life? Was it a little nerve-wracking, a little nervous? Like, what do I do now?
Not too bad. I had friends, obviously, that I grew up with. They were working at an auto plant here locally, and they got me in there. So I already knew where I was going before I got out of the military. And honestly, it just wasn't going anywhere.
So what'd you do in the Air Force?
I was a combat arms training and maintenance.
So what does that mean?
I was an instructor for small arms, everything from 9mm handgun up to including the 50 cal fully automatic machine gun.
The big
gun.
Ones in the airplane.
81mm mortar, Mark 19, which is a 40mm automatic grenade launcher. Training on those weapons as well as maintaining them.
I tell you, finding a job repairing mortars around Detroit, that's a tough job. Tough job to find. So how did you connect with the apprenticeship program and when you returned from the service?
It had been quite a while since I've been out of the military before I started the apprenticeship. Luckily, a friend of mine that I grew up with, who is also a military vet, he's a Marine, he's the one that notified or got in contact with me after he got into the apprenticeship and sat down with me, told me about it, the benefits of it, and what you'll be doing on the job, and I signed up, and I've never looked back.
So it sounded appealing to you when he first told you about it.
Most definitely.
Yeah. So what have you been doing lately as far as an apprenticeship has been concerned?
Lately, I've been at Metro Airport working for Centerline Electric, but I've also done other work at Flat Rock Assembly Plant, Henry Ford Hospital in West Bloomfield.
You've been all over, haven't you?
I've been a few places.
When you were in the Air Force, were you always kind of like a hands-on guy?
Yes. I mean, I'm a mechanical person. I like knowing how things work, working with my hands.
Was it much of a challenge to go from something mechanical to learn something electrical?
For me, it wasn't too bad just because I grew up around it. My dad was in electronics. He built our first color television we had.
You're kidding.
No.
Did you help him or did you just watch him? Or did you not even care?
No, I was interested, you know, watching the oscilloscope and, you know, seeing everything he's doing, soldering and everything. It was interesting.
Yeah. Did you ever think when you were a kid you'd end up doing this?
Not at all. But, I'm very glad I did it.
So how long have you been an apprentice?
I'm in my final year. It's been about 4.5 years.
Wow. It's almost like a college degree, almost.
It's gone by quick. It seems like it's going to be slow the whole way, and you're never going to reach that finish line. But I look back now, and it's
right around the corner.
Yeah, it's been quick, and it's been fun.
What do you like most about this?
Just all the experiences. The knowledge you have, knowing that you have a skilled trade, something that's valued, you know, that nobody can take it away from you. One thing I do like about it is it reminds me a lot of the military. I was started out at Lackland Air Force Base. I had gone to Incirlik Air Base, Turkey, where we kept track of all or maintained all the weapons in Turkey and northern Iraq. Then I went back to San Antonio, and I was at Camp Bullis. Thing that reminds me about it is, for example, I went to work with a guy for a few years at Lackland, went to Turkey. The person in the room next to me in Turkey, they happened to be stationed with the same guy at a different time when they were in Guam. So it's
same like, guy?
The same, yeah, same guy. He went to Guam. A year later, I went to Turkey. This other person comes to Turkey. They were stationed with him in Guam. So it's like its own community. You go from one job to the other, and you run into somebody that knows somebody, or you get reacquainted with another, you know, another friend that you've met in the trade. Like when I was at Flat Rock, I worked for a guy. He left. I went to Henry Ford Hospital. He was there. Then our foreman there that I worked for, I ran into him a year later at Cobo Center.
Wow.
So it's like its own family and community.
So it's almost as much travel as you had in the military, almost.
Almost.
Gary was saying earlier that they love military people because they're disciplined. They follow orders. They do what they're supposed to do. Has that helped you a lot in your electrical apprenticeship career?
Yeah, having the... for me, it was more the way I was raised, and also, but the people from the military do have the benefit. You know, it's instilled upon them. You know, having the pride, integrity, honor, always do the right thing, even when nobody's looking. Take the initiative, jump in there, do what needs to be done.
So if somebody's coming out of the military, they say, hey, Brad, what's your experience? What would you tell them about becoming an electrical apprentice?
Just to continue on with that, those things that were instilled onto you.
So you'd grade it high.
Starting from basic training, I mean, it's helped me out greatly from day one.
Yeah, very good. Gary, let's go back to you for a second. Do you get enough vets applying in the program to keep this thing going for you?
Yes, we do. Since January of this year, we've had 39 vets apply through the end of March. But look, we want more Brad Hewitts. We want more quality people like Brad Hewitt and the military vets. It enhances our program. Good candidates make our program even more successful than it already is. So we can do a lot better than what we are doing right now. And we do a lot of recruitment efforts, but we need to improve the numbers of the military vets. If I had my druthers, I'd have all military vets. That's the quality of people that we're dealing with.
So for those listening tonight, if you're a vet or if you have a family member who's a vet, how can they call you, Gary?
Well, the easiest way to do it, there's the DetroitEITC.org is our website. That'll give you information on where to go, how to maneuver. There's two different things that I want to, one different thing I want to substantiate between electrical apprenticeship and the pre-apprenticeship. The pre-apprenticeship is exactly that. It's to help people that maybe have some questions on what the apprenticeship's all about, and it's a good segue to enhance an opportunity for your apprenticeship. Everybody has the opportunity to apply for the regular apprenticeship and go through the standard process. This program that we're working on, the eStart, is going to help assist the military veterans to get into a registered apprenticeship of ours.
I hear you. And what would you tell them in closing, Gary?
I would absolutely say that if you are looking for a good career with good people, good contractors, organizations that have been around for over 100 years, you know, they've got the results showing that we are a successful training entity. If you want to measure what you want to do, the pre-apprenticeship that we have developed here will give you that shot to see if this is really for you or if it's not. So we welcome all military vets, and
we'd love to have more.
We'd love to have more.
Brad Hewitt, thank you for joining us tonight. Congratulations. Thank you for your service. Good luck on your future. Gary Polulik, thank you very much. You have been listening to Powering Michigan's Future, sponsored by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 58, and the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Ken Rogulski. Thanks for joining us.